Welcome to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast for corporate refugees who want to do more of what they love and get paid what they're worth. I'm David Schreiner Kahn, your guide and community builder. Smashing the Plateau is more than just a podcast. We're a platform offering resources, accountability, and camaraderie to high-performing professionals who are making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership. If you'd like to learn more about how you can do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth, go to smashingtheplateau.com or email us at info@smashingtheplateau.com.
If you want to go fast, right, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And I think that's really true.
In today's episode, we'll explore what it really takes to navigate a major career transition and build a business that's both meaningful and impactful. Thomas Bertels shares hard-won insights on overcoming the identity shift that comes from leaving a decades-long career, the mindset shifts required to thrive on your own, and the power of building structures and routines that propel you forward. You'll also hear how narrowing your focus, developing a signature framework, and fostering a strong sense of community can unlock new levels of productivity and fulfillment, whether you're leading a team or going solo. If you've ever wondered how to move beyond uncertainty and self-doubt into confident action, this conversation is packed with practical wisdom and inspiration. Now let's welcome Thomas Bertels. Thomas is a business transformation expert on a mission to make work more productive, valuable, meaningful, and impactful. He has 3 decades of experience helping companies from startups to Fortune 5 transform how work gets done. Thomas, welcome back to the show.
David, I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you on again. So you've had a long career before you started your current business. And the first thing I wanted to touch on is why leaving a decades-long career might feel like an identity crisis. So I wonder if you could share any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, one is that, you know, work obviously is a big part of our lives, right? So anything we do for decades, right, becomes part of, I think, who we are. So I think the moments when you leave that and then you venture out on your own, right, this whole support network that I think that you've gotten used to suddenly no longer exists. And I think that can quickly, I think, you know, get people to question what they're doing, whether they made the right choice. So I think it's not unusual, right? As people do something for a long time, now they do something different, that all of a sudden, you know, it feels very uncertain and probably sometimes overwhelming.
Yeah, that's true. And one of the things that I've noticed with this feeling of uncertainty is how important having the right mindset every single day can make a huge difference. In your mind, what would you say is the number one mindset shift that people need to make when they're going through a transition, career transition, after a long period doing something in a certain framework, in a certain way, a certain environment?
Well, for me, the transition was that, you know, you go from working in an organization where, you know, there are processes, right? There are ways of working that are established. There are, right, expectations that are being put on you. There are deliverables that you have. There's a structure that exists around you. When you strike out on your own, that structure is no longer there. And I think it's really important, I think, for people to build a structure that works for them, that keeps them going, because we all run out of steam at some point in time. So I think having that scaffolding that pulls us forward, I think, is really important.
Yeah. What structure have you found works well for you?
Well, I'm probably still experimenting with that. But a couple of things I found that worked for me are regular touch points, right? Regular routines that you follow, right? Whether that is you do a weekly blog post, whether it is you check in, right, every quarter with your favorite clients, whatever you do, but establish a rhythm that you stick to, even when it sometimes, right, feels pointless or hard or difficult. I think that helps to just, you know, propel people forward.
Yeah. What can you share that you think might help somebody who's fearful of trying to make the kind of pivot that you've made?
I think there's a couple of things that can help. One is surround yourself with people that have made that transition, who you can tap in, I think, for advice or support when you need it. I think the second thing that I think can help people is to just, quite frankly, manage your expectations. Right. So I think if you strive for perfection, right, that can really, I think, trip you up as you venture out as a solopreneur, because you might never launch, right? You never put up the website, you might never reach out to the first client, you might never feel ready. Right. So I think the ability to, I think, I live with imperfection and so I can accept 80% is good enough, I found is really important.
Yeah. That's a hard one for a lot of people. Yeah. Particularly if you think about how school trains us, you know, particularly for high achieving professionals, school didn't train us to aim for 80%. And right. And when you work for somebody else, the message, at least this was my experience when I was inside organizations, I did not hear that the expectations of me were to produce 80% of what I thought would be perfect. So yeah, so trying to aim for 80% when you're running your own business so that things can actually keep moving forward is really tough.
Yeah, but it's also really important, because if you are in an organization, kind of like the tasks that you perform, asked to perform, that list is kind of finite, right? You have a job description, that's what you're doing, and you know, also defines what you're not doing. But if you're by yourself in a business, there's always one more call you could make, one more presentation you could create, right? One more thing that you could do, should do, and probably would do if you had the time. But I think there's limits to the amount of energy we have and the amount of time we can invest in each one of these endeavors. And so the ability to kind of like manage yourself in that scenario, I think, is really important.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing that, because I think self-identity and mindset are like two of the biggest stumbling blocks that people face. And as you touched on, this process of positive self-identification with what you're doing now and having the right mindset is never ending. It's, you've been in your own business for a while, yet these issues still come up. I know they still come up for me. And I wanted to shift and talk a little bit about another issue that I see people struggle with a lot, particularly when they go from long career inside an organization to their own business, which is going really narrow in an offering. And, you know, you have incredible experience as a business transformation expert, and then you've taken that broad topic and developed a niche offer that makes it easy for prospective clients to see value in what you offer. And in particular, I know what you're working on now is looking at the current market where there's enormous pressure on functional leaders to improve productivity and respond to evolving business needs. And then you add to that this rapid evolution of AI, right? This scenario presents an enormous opportunity for companies, but also significant risk. And you have developed a solution to this challenge. You've taken this big topic of business transformation and kind of boiled it down into this framework and singular offer. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about this whole concept of developing a framework. And then, you know, we can talk specifically about your framework.
Yeah. So the process of developing the framework was interesting. So the starting point for me was I put out a book, nearly 19 months ago, I think, a business fable, right, called Fixing Work. And as one does, right, when one puts out a book, you go on a lot of podcasts, you present a lot, you give it to clients, you talk about it all the time. And obviously the idea is that it generates demand and interest to do something. And what I learned is, like, after a good year of doing that, is that everybody intellectually agreed and said, oh yeah, fixing work is very important. But it didn't necessarily translate into generating business opportunities. And so that caused me to stop and just like hit the reset button. And I reflected on the work that I've been doing, and I realized that, one, I think going to fix work and make work more interesting and motivating, that can seem really daunting for executives, right? Even if you offer like a business fable that like shows a path. Because every time we mess around with people's jobs, they get really antsy and defensive, and oftentimes for good reasons, right? Because in the past, it maybe didn't work out for them so well, right? When the boss had a good idea for making things more productive. But what I realized is that some of the work that I've been doing was centered on this topic of, you know, you have 5 pounds of work in a 3-pound bag and you don't get additional resources to deal with the additional work, right? So what do you do there? And so I'd been working with leaders on that, and I was in like a consulting framework, but also in a workshop with follow-up support. And so I realized that that's like an opportunity that's really everybody is struggling with these days, right? Whether it is that your budget got cut by 20% or the people are gone, but the work's still there. Whether it is that every day it's just an additional demand that's being put on already an overburdened workforce. Or whether it's just that, you know, what got you here won't get you there, right? AI forces us all to rethink how the work gets done. And I realized that that's really an area where I think people don't get any training or help. And so that's like the opportunity that I decided to zero in on. Because to your point, right, I think as a consultant, I think it's, you know, we all like to solve problems, but you can't solve every problem. You can't build deep expertise in all these different areas. So I think, to your point, being able to focus on one specific offering or one specific niche that you kind of like anchor your work around, I think is really important.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing the process. And can you talk a little bit about how your framework actually works?
Yeah. So the idea is, right, to work with the leader of a department, a function, right? Somebody typically who manages other leaders. So think a middle manager, let's say a VP or a senior director who's got a team of 30, 40, 50 people and upwards, right? And the way the approach works is to obviously upfront, you do a little diagnostic. You try to understand what's their business challenge, right? Is it to build better and bigger, right? Or is it to really, you know, make things work with less resources? And once you understand that challenge, right, there's like 2 ways of working, right? The typical scenario or one scenario is that you have a leader who realizes that there are issues, right? And they know that they got to do something now, right? Maybe they went to their boss and said, I need 2 extra heads to do all this work. And the boss said, I can't help you, right? You got to, but I think you have opportunities to be more productive, make things more efficient, right? Explore those first. And so that's typically where I engage with people. And, you know, the best way to do that is to actually get the team in the room and work through these issues, because the leaders oftentimes only see like the tip of the iceberg, right? They don't see all the issues. So you get the team in the room, and I've been working, it's like in a 3-day model, right? So day one, you figure out, what do we do today? What are all the tasks? Where are the pain points? What gets in the way of doing a great job? On day two, you switch gears and you say, right, where are we trying to get to, right? What's like our North Star, our direction? And what might be like a next step or two we could take to get there, right? That's oftentimes about how do we like take the value that we create to the next level, right? How do we do things that have more value, not just make them more efficient, but actually make them more effective? And over those 2 days, day one and day two, you identify, you know, a bunch of pain points, a bunch of ideas for how to make things better. So on day three, you take all these ideas that came up and you basically filter them, right? You look at, right, what has big impact, limited effort, but also what's like in our wheelhouse? What are some of the things that we can control or influence? Because there are many things, especially for these functional leaders, that's like get in the way of doing great work, but they're way above their pay grade, right? Maybe it's the ERP system, right? Or maybe it's the governance structure. Whatever it is, they can't change it, right? So it's really important to focus on the things that you can really tackle and get your arms around. And then, you know, you plan the execution, right? You take all these ideas, you figure out, like, you know, which are the ones that we want to tackle, and you basically build a path that gets you to the next level of performance, which might be 6 or 9 months down the road, right? So the idea is to, it's like, take one step in the right direction and then revisit that 6 or 9 months down the road and then level up again, because this is like a never-ending ongoing task. So that's one way I work with clients. And that typically works well if they already know that there are issues, there are opportunities, but they really want to mobilize and engage their team to tackle them. Another way I'll work with leaders is more one-on-one. So here the scenario is, let's say you are a newly appointed VP. You came from the outside. You spent the first 100 days figuring out, right, where the canteen is, what your boss wants from you, right? Who's on your team? What are their strengths and weaknesses? And you probably start to see some opportunities, but now it's really time to step back and say, what's my plan for my leadership tenure to get this to the next level? Where do I want to go? How do I get there? And so that's like more coaching conversation where over, you know, typically 5 sessions over 5 weeks, help people really think it through, right? Again, get their arms around, what do we do today? Where do we want to go? How do we get there?
Yeah. And where do you find that there are both real opportunities and where might there be resistance?
So it's a little bit of mindset question, quite frankly, right? So that's like the first dimension maybe to look at. So there are some executives that believe in the sink or swim model, right? I hire this vice president, I pay them a lot of money, and I expect them, right, to do whatever is necessary to, like, deliver the performance. And if they can't do it, I'll replace them, right? I might have to wait 12 months, 18 months. They can't do the job, I'll put somebody else in there. That's, quite frankly, in my view, a very wasteful mindset, right? Because not only—
I was going to say, that's pretty costly.
Yeah, it is, right? But again, I think it's like this, and I think it's a mindset question, right? Because again, the senior leaders, they made it to the top, right? So they obviously, right, think that they have what it takes, right? So why don't these other people have, right, what I have? So in those situations, it's really difficult to help people. But there are other leaders that realize that, you know, we don't prepare as people rise through the ranks. I think we as organizations, we do a terrible job of preparing people for changing the work when the work has to change. Right. So it's a little bit like, you know, I use a sailing analogy, right? If you say, like, you know, you train people to be a sailor, but they can only sail in the harbor, right? Where there's no wind and no waves and everything's kind of, you know, it's like, it's controlled, right? The Coast Guard is right next door if you're in trouble. Well, that's not, right? That's not the reality in most organizations, right? And so how do we prepare people when things are uncertain, when they don't have, right, all the authority that they need, when the team maybe is not fully engaged, right? When things are messy, right? How do we prepare people to live in the real world? And so the leaders that I work with, they realize that, you know, those folks on their team that have these challenges to get productivity, right, they could probably use a little help, right? Because the other thing that I think we tend to underestimate is that I think people have limited experience, right? If you're like a typical VP, let's say you're 40 years old, right? Maybe, right, you had some, right, prior responsibilities. We have seen a few things. Maybe you've been to a VR, maybe you've been to like a, you know, big system implementation, but you haven't really seen everything, right? You don't have all the levers, and you're not aware of all the levers that you could pull, right? For example, I find that a lot of people really don't know how to unlock people's motivation by designing the work in a way that it brings out the best in them, that people feel they have ownership, that they think the work is meaningful, that they get feedback, right? So those are opportunities. And again, I think that's something where I believe I can add value by just showing people some tricks that they maybe not have been exposed to.
Yeah, no, that's great. And the other thing that strikes me about this is you've identified really clearly what makes a great client, right? Someone who's open to doing things a little differently, learning from somebody who has a particular expertise that may not exist inside the company, and also looking at their direct reports and their teams from the perspective of, my job is to help you succeed as much as possible and to provide whatever tools and resources I can provide within the confines of our budget to be able to help you succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it boils down to, like, again, I think this mindset topic, right? If you think that, you know, people should figure out that by themselves, I think, you know, you're going to believe that, right? And I think you're going to have a certain way of doing things. And oftentimes, right, I think those leaders also have, like, these top-down ideas, right? I'll figure out what I'm supposed to get done, and I'll tell everybody what to do, and then we're going to do that, right? But I think, in my experience, the real power comes from if you provide that top-down direction, but also tap into the energy of employees and you know, the people who work for you to take ownership for some of these ideas and bring their own ideas to the table, right? And then I think you get a really, I think, rich and an effective conversation going, because now you can combine, like, the strategic perspective where we're going with people's knowledge and expertise in how the work actually gets done and maybe how it could be better.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that strikes me, Thomas, is it sounds to me like there's some parallels with what we talked about towards the beginning of our conversation, where we were discussing when you go out on your own, tapping into resources of people who are like-minded and are in similar situations, right? The power of community connections. And it sounds to me like in an organizational setting, you're also talking about tapping into the power of community in a slightly different way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing I find is, right, when you ask leaders, kind of like, what's wrong, right, in your shop, they give you 10 things, right? And then when you actually bring the team in the room, you end up with a list of 60, 70 things, right? Because the leaders only see the top of the iceberg, right? But the mass is underwater. So, right, there's an opportunity there, right? You just get more ideas, more input, right? The other piece I find is that it's really hard to drive change by yourself. So, you know, I can just hand out assignments and try to, like, manage things, right? So I guess as the Wizard of Oz, you know, you pull the different levers on the machine. And I think it's both much more powerful and also much more fun if you do these things together. So one thing that I personally enjoy is when you start to see people on the team leaning in, having ideas, contributing, taking ownership. I had this experience a couple of weeks ago. I was working with like an HR team and, you know, looking at all the opportunities. So one of the things that they had was, they complained about was that people would not show up for interviews. I said, well, you know, I was like, have you thought about themselves scheduling, right, instead of you scheduling? Like, no, we're already doing this, right? So we have a tool that pick a time slot, right? They book this up, but they just don't show up, right? And then I asked, well, isn't there like a way that you can at least send them a reminder, right? I mean, you know these tools, right? They all have the setting, remind people a week before, a day before, on the day off, right? And then I said, no, our tool won't do that. And that kind of like ended the conversation and sort of moved on to the next topic, right? And so 5 minutes later, one of the people on the team kind of like perked up very excited and said, you know, I just went on the Microsoft website and actually turns out that the tool we use actually can do that, right? And so those are kind of like some of the weak signals that I find personally enjoyable because they indicate that people actually, right, that you get their shower time. They really start to think about, well, could it be possible? What could we do? What are the options here? And not just takes up the first answer for granted. And I think so kindling that energy, kindling that little fire, I think is so important because otherwise it's just the leader pushing that boulder up the hill. You know, it becomes a pretty lonely and frustrating task.
Right. Which, again, sounds to me like very much like the power of community. You're tapping into the resources of the people that you're connected to.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's this African proverb that I love, which is, right, if you want to go fast, right, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And I think that's really true.
Yeah, so true. And thank you for sharing that. Thomas, before we close out, is there anything else you want to mention that I haven't asked or we haven't discussed?
No, I think we covered it. I think it was a great conversation. Thank you.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to go deeper with anything that you've shared today, access any resources, learn about your framework, where's the best place to go?
Yeah, there's a couple of places. My website would be one, right? That's www.purpose.works. You can find me on LinkedIn. We have a newsletter, right, that right now is on a weekly basis after a long hiatus. And I also have a podcast where, you know, I talk to leaders and you know, thought leaders and executives about what they can do or their ideas for how to make work more productive, meaningful, impactful. And maybe we can put those resources into the show notes so that people can access that.
Absolutely, we certainly will. Thomas, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau and share your insights and give us an update on what you've been up to. My guest today has been the president of PurposeWorks Consulting, Thomas Bertels. Thank you, Thomas, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Smashing the Plateau. Our mission is empowering people like you to do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth. Help us spread the message that you can connect passion with profit. Please share this episode with a friend, share it on LinkedIn, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. I wish you much success in smashing your plateau. See you on our next episode.